You are now listening to episode 84 of No Truce Barred, the best up-and-coming podcast on the internet. And in this episode, I discuss a myriad of topics. Student loans, should they be forgiven? Is college still necessary in 2022 for one's success? Roe v. Wade, real controversial subject, so many different points of views, and the polarizing Kevin Samuels. I discuss what parts of his message I agreed with, and then I discuss what parts of his message I disagreed with. Make sure you follow the No Truths Barred YouTube channel. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy this episode. Peace. Peace. Welcome to episode 84 of No Truths Barred, the best up-and-coming podcast on the internet. And I'm your host, Hoy Kawaku Timmons. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. As you know, I'm doing two episodes a month now. Just kind of give it a little bit more time to circulate out there, you know, for the listeners and the people that may kind of come across this platform by accident. And also, I want to take the beginning of each episode to thank everybody who's clicked the like button, who's left a comment, who's shared a piece of content. I deeply appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Also, I want to thank all of the guests who's been on this platform as well. It was definitely an honor to build and converse with you guys. And I'm looking forward to bringing more guests on throughout the month of June and into the summer. I was supposed to have some guests on this month, but things didn't quite pan out that way. So once again, thank you. And also, episodes for No Truths Barred is available on Spotify. I'm not on SoundCloud anymore. So I'm on Spotify and I'm on Google Podcasts. Also, pardon me, let me take a sip. Also, all of the episodes are available on YouTube, so you can go back and catch episode 83, 82, 81. All of that fun stuff is up on YouTube. Without further ado, it's just so much to talk about. So on this episode, I wanted to do something a little bit different. I wanted to step away from my normal modality and how I put out content, because normally I'll have a subject. And I'll come in and I'll disseminate factual information about that particular subject. And then I'll also provide my own perspective on that particular subject. But life is about evolution. You have to be malleable. You have to adapt. And I want to make sure that I'm never keeping this platform stagnant. So with that being said, I decided on this episode, I just want to kind of provide my perspective, my take on certain current events that's going on. And I don't normally do this, so maybe this might be something that I do a little bit more going forward. I'm not exactly sure, but listen, let's just jump into it. So I went to college. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in history, and a lot of people say that's a useless major, but that's neither here nor there. But I graduated from VCU, and one of the things I took with me in addition to my degree is student loan debt. So this is a hot subject right now. This is something that Joe Biden has been getting grilled on throughout his presidency. Is he going to cancel student loans? Is he going to forgive student loans? You've seen such people as Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. They've been extremely vocal about the need for student loans to be canceled. Even AOC has been just as vocal about the cancellation of student loans. And there's like many good reasons. One of the things that I look at with student loans is, let's take this into a conspiratorial realm when we're talking about student loans. Is this a way to penalize the poor and minorities that want to get a higher education? Because when you think about it, you're coming somewhere to get skill sets. You're coming somewhere to build a network. You're also coming somewhere to augment perspective and understanding. But most importantly, you're coming somewhere that's going to allow you to get into a career that will also allow you to improve your lot in life. But what seems to happen disproportionately is that the poor and minorities, specifically black and brown folks that go to universities, take out more student loan debt than any other group that come in. Also, after graduation, a lot of these people do not find high-paying jobs immediately, and we're mired by this student loan debt. So it almost seems like, to me, it's getting to the point where academia is going to be exclusively for people with wealth, people that come from money. Now, the argument that people will put out there is, why don't you just go for a scholarship? Why don't you just apply yourself, get the grades, and obtain the scholarship, and then that way, you'll be good. You'll be able to go to school, and you don't have to worry about student loan debt. Well, realistically, scholarships are not set up for everybody to get one. Realistically, not everybody's going to have some sort of fund, some college fund or 529. A lot of people are not going to have that. And when you look at these institutions, the cost of tuition is always going up. I asked somebody recently that has an intimate knowledge of the financial aid system, what justifies this absurd amount of money going to school? So you look at different colleges. I'll take VCU because I went there. When I was at VCU, it was about, and this was a long time ago now, when I went to VCU, it was about $9,000 per semester to go to VCU. $9,000 per semester to go to VCU. Actually, excuse me, $9,000 for the academic year, pardon me, to go to VCU. So when you look at that, it's like, wow, that's still quite a bit of money, but it's not that bad. Do you know how much in-state tuition is per academic year at VCU now? I believe it's anywhere between $22,000 to $24,000 to attend VCU in-state in 2022. Now, there are colleges and universities in the state of Virginia that the tuition is higher than it is at VCU. And that's still a shame. That's still a tragedy. And I had to ask, what exactly am I paying for? When you're telling me that I should go $50,000 to $60,000 to $80,000 in debt for a degree before I'm the age of 22, what is it that I'm paying for? And I have someone break it down. Well, you know, certain scholars of prestige, they work here and they have to be paid a certain amount. And then you have to look at the facilities and the amenities on campus and all this good stuff. And it sounded good, and it almost sounded really pragmatic. But when I have to look at it objectively and I have to assess things with my own acumen, I don't really agree with that. I think that these universities are charging students this absurd amount of money to come there because they can and because the federal government is going to guarantee these loans and that people cannot default on them and the university is going to get their money. So with that said, it's basically like they can charge anything that they would like to students. And who's going to say anything? And Bernie Sanders has been vocal. Bernie Sanders, has been a fervent opponent of this insane tuition. And he's argued for free undergraduate education, free college education, which is available in a lot of other countries. You know, free college education is available in other countries. But here in the most powerful country on earth, we almost punish our students, punish our young people by placing them in debt that it will take them decades to get out of. So how is this even a win? How is it a fucking win when I have to go out here and get this degree just to go out and work a job to pay back the degree? And then furthermore, when you look at these colleges and universities, they're not really churning out intellectuals. They're not really churning out people that are shifting the social paradigm, if you will. What it is you're producing smart workers. And it's almost, not even almost, it is, it's still built and predicated upon that Henry Ford model of producing a nation of workers. And if you go back and you look at the way the public school system is structured, and this is something I was conversing with somebody about, the school system from the time you're in kindergarten all the way up through when you graduate high school is almost preparing you for work. It's preparing you for this structured way of living. It's preparing you to get up, go and work a job day in, day out, do the 9-to-5, and come home. Because you look at the fact that when you go to school, all of your best waking hours are in this classroom. And not only are your best waking hours in this classroom, but you're in uncomfortable chairs. The desks are hard. You have teachers there that are just there for a check, and they really don't care about what they're teaching you. You're around a lot of other people who do not give a F about learning. It's just a recipe for disaster. It's an environment for disaster, right? But we don't like to think about it that way. But what school, I noticed, the public school system, it does, it facilitates an environment that grooms you for the workforce. I'm not saying the workforce is wrong. I'm not going to be one of those people that get on social media or onto this particular platform and tell people that if you work a 9-to-5, there's something wrong with you. I'm never going to tell you that. I'm going to say that you should always look outside of the box, and I think that you should always work to get to a point where you're doing things that you have connection to. But it's really, that's what it's groomed for. So you got all of these kids just coming out of college, and you're just going to work jobs. You're going to get even more debt when you get a mortgage or try or attempt to get a mortgage, get a car note, get credit cards. And you're just working, and you're in this endless cycle of trying to pay off all of these little things, all of these little traps that has sucked you in. And I think we have to address the way that we structure education. We have to remove these standardized tests. We have to remove the Scantron, and we have to get to the point where we're really building a scholastic nation. We're really building a nation of intellectuals and the thinkers and people that are inquisitive and people that are curious about the world around them and able to scrutinize and test and rip apart ideas. We have to, and not only rip apart ideas, but have discourse, reach resolution. These are things that are needed if we're able to continue on as a society. But right now, all that the public school system teaches you, all that college teaches you to a certain degree, is to regurgitate information. It doesn't teach you to, hey, okay, well, this is an argument about existentialism. This is an argument, I don't know, about nihilism. This is my perspective, my life experiences. This is what maybe this religion says about life. And this is what science says about the origin of life. Okay, let's debate. What is the perfect synthesis of these kind of like superficially, diametrically opposed pieces of information? What's the synthesis, the bridges to connect all of these different things? And that's where we have to get to as a society. But college and the public school system, it's about building workers and throwing people into debt. And that's what it's about. And that's why I, in good nature, I cannot even honestly encourage people to go out here and to continue to pursue a college education. And I'm not saying it is wrong. I'm not saying that people should not go. But when I was coming up, when I was leaving high school, I remember guidance counselors talking to you. And a guidance counselor would say to you, look, if you do not go to college, your life is going to be in this sort of position. If you do not go to college, what's ahead of you? Unemployment, a life of penury, a life of destitution. This is what's ahead of you. Disappointment, failure. And so what happened then, and I think we still kind of carry this sort of perspective now, is that you have a certain paucity with life. So you look at academia as being the only option. If you want to make money, academia is the only option. If I don't go through academia, then I'm going to be a failure. And that perspective is still with us here now in 2022. I actually spoke a while ago at a middle school. I was one of a few people that was invited to a middle school to come in and speak. And I remember telling them, and people, the teachers kind of looked at me kind of weird and crazy, but I remember telling the kids there, I said, one, figure out what your passion is. Figure out what you enjoy. And that's something that so many of adults, we do not encourage our young people to do that. Find what you're passionate about and connect to that. And we often, more often than not, we look at our young people and we don't tell them the ills of just trying to fit your circle into this square peg. We don't tell them the monotony, the mendacity of just this 9-to-5 life. Everybody goes through this direction. Everybody goes this path. Somebody has to step out and question things. And that's why I told those young folks, I said, listen, get a trade, get a CDL, get a HVAC certification, start a business, become an entrepreneur, do these things. These may be the things that you may find more rewarding than going and sitting in a college for 4 to 5 years and coming out with a mountain of student loan debt. You might enjoy that far more. You might enjoy that way better, to be honest with you. You know, and so Joe Biden on the campaign trail, to stick to the student loans topic really quick, Joe Biden, when he was on the campaign trail, one of the things that Joe Biden said was he would agree to cancel up to $10,000 of student loans. That's really not going to do anything. And it's really a slap in the face when we can see billions of dollars in subsidies go to other countries from the United States, but you cannot do something like cancel student loans. So let me tell you why I'm an advocate of canceling student loans. One, I have student loans. Two, the way student loans are set up is almost like it's like a payday loan on steroids. You will almost never be able to pay that student loan off. And it's criminal that you are able to give these loans to kids and they have to go out here and mire themselves in debt just to get ahead. It is disgusting. It is sick. And myself, like other kids, when people say, oh, well, you were 19 or you were 20 or you were 21 and you signed this. Listen, and a 20-year-old is not an adult. I don't care how people try to, oh, but you're 20. Talk to a 20-year-old. A 20-year-old is just as extremely misguided. And a lot of times kids and parents went out here and they got these loans. You got kids that are in college, they really don't even want to be there. But they went out and they got these loans, and now they owe all of this money. For what? Like, really, for what? And the other part that I find weird, and it's not even weird, I know why it is, but you take an 18-year-old. Let's say you take two 18-year-olds, right? You have one 18-year-old, and they're going to go the traditional path. They want to go to college. They want to get their bachelor's degree, you know, to get their BA, get their BS, what have you. And they may want to, go to graduate school, or they may want to do whatever, right, and get their degree. They will apply for student loans, and they will get tens of thousands of dollars in student loans to go to college. The bank is like, hey, yeah, cool, yeah, you got that. But let's take another 18-year-old. This 18-year-old is like, I don't want to do school. This 18-year-old is like, I don't want to go to college. I want to look at some other stuff. You know what? I want to start a business. That's what this 18-year-old is saying. I want a business. I want to work for myself. So I'm going to go. I'm going to figure out how to come up with a business plan. I'm going to come up with a, you know, 50, 100-page business plan on what it is I want to do. I'm going to try to work with some people, get some help. That kid could go to a bank and say, hey, and here's the funny thing. He may only need $15,000 to get his business off the ground. Not 40, not 50, not 60. He may only need about 15, let's say 10 to $15,000 to get his business off the ground. I don't know, maybe he want to have a little kiosk, whatever it is, vendor, whatever, right? The bank is going to deny it. But when you look at it, that kid that's taking that entrepreneurial path, now, here's the caveat, there are more inherent risks with choosing entrepreneurship as a path. That's just the truth. That's what it is. But that kid that took the path of entrepreneurship could potentially earn 10 times his initial investment. He could set himself up on the path of financial freedom. Whereas you have this kid over here that went and got the college degree, they're in debt for the next 30 years. So yeah, student loans need to be canceled. They have to be. Because when you look at it, the complaint is, why aren't young people buying homes? Well, they have student loan debt. Why aren't young people buying more new vehicles? They have student loan debt. This debt is a burden to everyone that has it. So until we get to the point where we can fix this, or school becomes free, or you cancel student loans, you're going to see a slowdown on that. A lot of kids, a lot of young adults my age are not having children. You know why people aren't having children? Because they simply cannot afford to have kids. Because they have student loans that they have to pay. And it's sickening, you know. I really don't know what Joe Biden is going to do about this. You know, I think it might behoove him to cancel student loans, because a lot of young people aren't really avid Joe Biden fans, you know. So we'll see. You know, like I said, this week is different. I'm touching on a lot, so it's going to kind of like be tangents. This is going on. But I wanted to do this because a lot of hot stuff is in the news and whatnot. And I want to provide my perspective. Like I said, this is not a usual format for me. You know, oh, shout out to my folks at the Whole Division Podcast. Also, shout out to the homie, my sister, LaWanna Chambers. Make sure you, LaWanna McKinney Lawson, I'm sorry, I mess up her name. Shout out to her too. Make sure you follow her on Instagram. You know, Growth is Tacit, Whole Division Podcast. Follow them, good peoples. They supported the platform, so shout out to them really quick. But the other hot topic issue is that you have Roe versus Wade. Now, Roe versus Wade, it was a case between 1971-1973. It ruled that a state law that banned abortion was unconstitutional. The ruling made abortion legal in many circumstances. I had to take a note on this. The decision said that a woman's right to privacy extended to the fetus, unborn child that she was carrying. So, recently, Justice Samuel, Alito, he states that the support for Roe v. Wade is unconstitutional, and that abortion bans should be left up to states and their elected representatives. And so this got out, and now the issue is that the Supreme Court could very well likely, or will, overturn Roe v. Wade. So this is a touchy subject because there's a lot of different facets to this particular discussion, and this is why it's a touchy subject. It's a touchy subject because you have to look at your personal beliefs. You have to look at it from a healthcare perspective. You have to look at it from a systemic perspective. And you have to also look at it from a bureaucratic perspective. You have to, it's a lot going on here when you're talking about abortions. So I want to just kind of start with my personal perspective on abortion, period. For me personally, if I was to get a woman pregnant, I would not want her to have an abortion. Me personally, I would like, instead of an abortion, you know, you can give a child up for adoption, you know. Now, I'm not saying this wrong. I'm talking about my personal preference. For me, if I was to get a woman pregnant, I would like to step up, take the responsibility, and be the active father in my child's life. That's just me. But at the same time, I would not, and this is where it gets catchy, because I would not want to force the woman I'm with into a situation that maybe she's not ready for. I mean, it would probably crush me to know that the woman that I'm having, that I got pregnant, is going to have an abortion. That would really break my spirit. It would really break my soul. But I can't stop her from doing what she wants with her body. Also, when you look at abortion, the reason why, even if you disagree or agree with abortion, the reason why it has to be legal is what the only thing you're going to do is you're going to drive women underground. And women are still going to get abortions, but this time they're going to do them in far less safe and unsanitary conditions, and in conditions where they may cause harm on themselves trying to get these abortions. Some would argue that life begins at conception. You have people that are late-term abortion doctors, and I read an article, real fascinating article, about a late-term abortion doctor who actually left the field. And the reason he said he left and the field was because on the ultrasound, when they would do the late-stage abortions, he could see the fetus, like the mouth of the fetus, like kind of curl in agony or pain as this procedure was happening. And so he, you know, and what I'll do, I'll link the article that I was reading on my Instagram posts and all that good stuff, and on Twitter as well, when you look at this episode. So he left the field. So you have people that said life begins at conception. Now, for me, like I said, it's a touchy subject because I cannot dictate what a woman wants to do. I cannot dictate a woman's autonomy. But there are instances where there are health complications. There are instances where if a woman has this child, she could potentially die in labor. And she may not be able to carry it to have this child. There are instances where the child, if it was born, would not be able to live a functional life. Now, once again, however a child is born is up to the discretion of the parents as to how they want that child to live, the quality of life that child will have. But I say that to say that you have parents that are like, well, my kid is going to have an exceptionally hard life. I know this. So I would rather spare them that. Now, once again, I'm not saying I'm agreeing or disagreeing with that sort of perspective. It is what it is. But there are a myriad of circumstances, from health, for both the health of the fetus and the mother, that could justifiably warrant an abortion. So that's just the case in that, you know, and is it, do you have the child and risk the death of the mother? I mean, how, like, these are all decisions that a lot of parents across this country have to make on a daily basis. And so when we try to have this real monochromatic view of abortion, it does a disservice to women and it does a disservice to children. And what I find ironic is that, and I always, I'm real castigating of the Republicans. I'm really castigating of the Democrats as well, because I love Jesse Ventura's quote when he calls them the two-party dictatorship. I'm in agreement. It's a two-party dictatorship. But what I will say about the Republicans, a lot of them are pro-life. A lot of the Republicans are against abortion. But that pro-life of the Republicans, the pro-life concept, the pro-life mentality of the conservatives, it has an expiration date. Because once you're born, you could be born into an environment of extreme poverty. You could be born into an environment where your parents are drug abusers. You could be born into an environment where your parents physically, sexually abuse you. You could be a victim of horrible circumstances due to laws that have impacted the Black community adversely for the past several decades. It's just a lot of different variables. And my problem with the conservatives and the Republicans is that you want people to have kids, but after they have them, they're on their own. So if we're going to be pro-life, the pro-life has to be pervasive. We have to also make sure that these kids that we want born, these kids that we don't want to be aborted, we as a society, as an American community, are going to come together and help make sure that these kids have the proper environments to grow up in. Because on one hand, you say that you're pro-life and you care about life. So if that's the case, you cannot just dismiss and throw these kids away into a messed up system once they're born, because you have this pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality at the same time. That becomes hypocrisy. That's a contradiction. Pro-life isn't just saying, hey, I want women to not get abortions. Pro-life is saying that if I don't want women to get abortions, I'm going to work goddamn hard to make sure that we have a society that is conducive to the proper rearing of these children that I did not want aborted. You also have issues with rape. There are women that have been raped and gotten pregnant during a rape and decided to get an abortion. There are women that have said, well, this was a heinous event, but they still don't get the abortion. But there are women that say, hey, I'm a victim of SA. I am going to get this aborted. Is she wrong? No, it's her body. Her body, her choice. I remember someone was saying this. I can't remember who said it. But during the pandemic, you had a lot of conservatives. And they would say, hey, I don't want to wear a mask. That's my freedom. That's my liberty to do, to not wear a mask. I'm not getting a vaccine. That's my right, my liberty to do. I'm not getting a vaccine. But that mentality ends when it comes to abortions. That mentality ends when you're talking to women, and do women have their own autonomy? Are they allowed to control their own bodies? That's too much. That's the perfect boundary to cross. Can't wear a mask because it's my choice. But this young lady over here can't get an abortion because of what? You can't have it both ways. But here's the dark side to this whole thing. If you look at the origin of Planned Parenthood, you have to go all the way back to Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger was a racist and a eugenicist. You know, she would often talk about making sure that those that aren't properly fit, right, whether it be genetically, mentally, whatever, are not allowed to breed. And disproportionately, Planned Parenthood clinics are more Black and brown neighborhoods. Now, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial. I'm just stating the facts here. I think I read in 2020 that African-American women make up, I think, what, something like 11% of the U.S. population, but they represent 38% of abortions. That's a crazy number. Once again, I'm not trying to say be pro, you know, pro or anti this, but what I am saying is that one of the dark sides of abortion, at least the way that it evolved in this country, is that it came from a woman that did not like black people. It came from a woman that was an ardent racist and eugenicist, Margaret Sanger. And she often said, you know, in order to get women, black women, to accept this program, she would want black ministers to go and talk to their congregations and talk to black women to make them not afraid of Planned Parenthood. So that's something to keep in mind when we're talking about Planned Parenthood and we're talking about abortion, is the origins of it. And once again, I say, I believe that a woman's body is her body. It's her autonomy. Whatever she feels she needs to do is up to her. Because if it comes to men, we would never allow nobody to tell us as men what we should and what we should not do with our bodies. We would be fervently opposed to that shit. We would not have it at all. We wouldn't do it. I want to talk about a little bit more about Margaret Sanger. And I found this quote that she wrote in 1914. It's not a quote. It is from an article. It's a quote from an article, pardon me. This is about Margaret Sanger. She did focus her efforts on minority communities because that was where, due to poverty and limited access to health care, women were especially vulnerable to the effects of unplanned pregnancy. As she framed it, birth control is fundamental to women's rights. Enforced motherhood is the most complete denial of a woman's right to life and liberty. This looks very benign on the surface, or it sounds very benign, but when you find out that she was a racist and she was a eugenicist, I just have to wonder what was her true angle for targeting minorities when it comes to abortion. A lot of communities, people don't have money. People don't have resources. People have limited access to health care. But it's almost kind of nefarious that she would aim this at black women in poor communities. That's just something I don't really agree with. But all in all, the scary part is this, is that if they overturn Roe v. Wade, what's next to be overturned? Is it Brown versus Board of Education? Is that next? You know, what will continue to come up? If this is successfully overturned, what happens next? What is the next case that have affected minorities that could possibly be overturned next? And these are things that are complicated. It's real complicated, man, you know? So I'm gonna wrap this episode up. This one is gonna be too long, but I wanted to talk with y'all on some real shit real quick about these different situations. But I'll be remiss if I didn't speak about this. This past Friday, Kevin Samuels. I want to talk about Kevin Samuels, but this past Friday, Kevin Samuels died. I think he was found in his apartment. He was unresponsive. And just to briefly, if you're watching this and you don't know who Kevin Samuels is, he's considered by many like a dating coach, dating guru guy, relationships guy. And he's really known for kind of speaking about relationships and more specifically between black men and women. So let me provide my objective view on Kevin Samuels, because he seems to be, even posthumously, a rather controversial figure. he seems to be a rather polarizing figure to whether either you're going to really love him, and some people have like a sycophantic relationship with him, or you're going to hate him. I've seen people call him the enemy. I've seen people call him a hate monger. So you may ask, well, what is your opinion on Kevin Samuels? My opinion on Kevin Samuels is my opinion, like on most things in life, is that there's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of perspectives that you can have on an individual. So one of the things I did, because I can't just look at a clip and formulate an opinion. So what I did one time a while back, I looked at a few videos. It tried to in totality. He had really long videos, or like 2-hour videos and stuff. But I tried to. And objectively, this is what I come away with from Kevin Samuels. On the negative side, when I look at Kevin Samuels, when I listen to a lot of his information, I think a lot of his information is based and rooted in a more capitalistic structure and the way he can quantify success and value. It could kind of almost be in a more racist, and for lack of better words, kind of like a more racist Eurocentric perspective on how men and women should analyze one another. And what I mean by that is he had a concept where he talked about high-value men and high-value women. And what he would always throw out there about high-value men is that they would make 6 figures or more. One of the things I found omitted from the videos I've seen, because I'm not an avid Kevin Samuels follower, but one of the things I saw omitted from Kevin Samuels' videos when he would talk about what constitutes a high-value man, it was, you know, money, really it was oriented around money, your resources, what you can do for others. But I never heard a lot about character. I never heard a lot about integrity. I never heard a lot about empathy. Is this person, you know, a good steward of finances? Are they a good leader? You know, what do they do in their community? How do they relate within their own family? These are kind of things that I feel like are important to being a good father, to being a good husband in a relationship. And I think also if you are high value, you know, his term, then you would also have these things as well. And I felt like from what I've seen, he never really emphasized that part of the high value man thing. The other part of it is that he would say, another thing I disagreed with, is that he would always say in the videos I've seen, is that women need to be thankful for the world that men created. Like the world that women have around them is a world that men created, and that women ought to be thankful. But here's the reality. It's not the world that men created. Some men created certain conveniences that we use. Some women created certain conveniences that we use. But it's not just a generalizing of men. It's nothing. See, what we have to attack is this idea that being a man or a woman gives you innate behaviors, innate characteristics. That's not the truth. So you can't just say men, you got men that sit around and play video games all day. You got men that never seen the inside of a gym. You got men that are dumbasses, for lack of better words. What did they build? They just were born with a penis. You know, like it was nothing innate about them being men and this world that we created, right? This world was created by multiple people, men and women, both by religion, by science, by different civilizations, the Ottomans, the Spaniards, the Romans, you know, you look in Africa, you know, the Oyo, Mali. So many different cultures, so many civilizations, so many different groups, so many different scholars contributed to this world that all of us benefit from. It wasn't just because someone was a dude. And that's something that I disagreed with him on as well. because it's a take that's almost kind of based upon a racist template of just generalizing a group of people based upon perceived innate characteristics. And I disagree with that too. I also disagreed with, because I want to give you stuff that I agreed with too, because I want to be fair in my assessment of Kevin Samuels. The other thing that I disagreed with Kevin Samuels, in my opinion, was the concept of women being leftovers, you know, where he says, you know, get a dog, die alone. Now, I understood the base level of his argument, but my problem with that is with both men and women, I don't like to put, because I notice in this society, in this country, we have an idea where we want to put a person's potential, a person's success, a person's capacity for success within a box, within a time limit. So, you know, you got people out here like, man, if I don't own a home by the time I'm 25, I'm messed up in the game. If I'm not earning at least six figures by the time I'm 30, I'm messed up in the game. If I'm not doing this by the time I'm 50, then I fucked up my life. But I think life is more complex than that. I think that you can do damn near anything at any age. You know, who's to say? You got some people out here that may not meet their soulmate until they're about 52, 55 years old. You got some people that met their one and only when they were like 19. You got some people that got to go through multiple relationships. And I just don't agree with that. I'm going to put a ceiling on your happiness and your potential because you've hit this age and you don't have kids, or you hit this age and you're not married, because life is tricky. Life is weird. And you just don't know who you don't know who you will cross paths with. So that was another thing, you know, I disagreed with. And then at times too, I saw certain videos where, and I want to be careful how I say this because it's my, what I agree with, it may make me sound hypocritical, but there were times too where I felt like he went beyond just constructive criticism. I felt like he kind of got off and I think he, to a degree, he did get off on humbling black women and humbling black men too. I think his proclivity for humbling people was ubiquitous across the board between black men and black women. And it was rough and it was raw, but there were times where he provided no practical resolution. It would just be raw, gritty castigation, judgment, humbling you without a resolution. So I'm down with that, but you also have to, the onus is on you too. If you're going to take it there on somebody, you also have to provide a resolution. That's also needed. So once again, I don't have like 30 things that I agree and disagree with because I wasn't a huge follower, but I did on my own time sit down and watch a few episodes. Now, let me tell you some of the things I did agree with. He would often talk to young men, and this is something people don't know, that before he started, you know, really conversing with black women, his platform was really dedicated to men for years. And this is the one thing I wanted to point out. I saw this on social media, and this is something that I want to say. People are like, Kevin Samuels' platform, it didn't blow up until he started to talk about black women. And to a degree, on a superficial level, that is true. But I want to point out something that's a little bit more disheartening and somewhat sad. There's another reason why his platform blew up when he started to talk about women. The other reason is because a lot of times the emotions, the pain of men, no one cares about. Men are seen as disposable. And actually, it's socially acceptable to shit on men. Like, if you go back to the 90s, I remember this. I remember Jerry Springer, Maury Povich. I remember Jenny Jones, Ricky Lake, in the early 2000s, you had Old Drama on BET. I remember all of these shows. And even going way back then, it was nothing to have a panel of women or men and women talk about how basically black men ain't shit. It was cool to talk about it. So I almost think that in our cognitive fabric, if you will, that it's the norm. Like if I made a video and I just talked about how messed up black men are, it really wouldn't rattle you because you've been acclimated to hearing that sort of information. It's normalized to us. And I think one of the reasons why his channel didn't really blow up, because it's like, oh, well, this is just another black dude talking about black men and pointing out the shortcomings in black men. And as a society, we have kind of the consensus is that black men ain't shit. So he's just talking about, according to society, something that we already know. And that's why I think that it didn't really pick up until he talked about black women, because if you go back to the 90s, you look at all these different talk shows, we never really seen anything where a man was bringing heat to women like that. You would have never, ever seen that. And he brought a lot of heat to women. And so let me get into this. I'll speak from a male perspective. One of the things he said that really changed me, he talked about, not changed me, but one of the things that I do agree with, he was a stickler about men being financially responsible before they have children, before they try to date. And I believe in that. You know, don't be out here if you're homeless, if you're not making no money, trying to find a girlfriend. You need to be getting your finances in order. So I definitely agree with him on that. You know, I saw videos where guys would call in and they would say stupid things like they're trying to start a business, but they're unemployed. He would tell them, man, be realistic. He talked about black men. He said, hey, if you're making X amount of money an hour, you need to go and get another job. You need to be working about 60 hours a week, pay off debt, invest money, relocate, get your wardrobe together. These are things that he advocated for men to do, and I definitely agree. And one of the quotes Kevin Samuels, I'll use from Kevin Samuels, and he said this, which I thought was brilliant. He said, before you try to go after the woman of your dreams, first make sure that you're the man of your dreams. Clean your house up, get your shit together before you go out here trying to talk to these women out here, you know? And he said that to a lot of men. He was very critical of men. And that's something I agree with. The other thing, too, is that he talked to women a lot about choices. He would talk to women and he would tell women, you know, they would call in and they're looking for this guy. And one of the things I noticed while I went and watched the show on my own, not through watching clips, is that a lot of sisters would call in and they would not want to be judged, but they had a negative and a condescending view towards average black men. I've seen women on his platform that said dating a man that's a teacher is a downgrade. Dating a man that makes $40,000 to $50,000 a year is a downgrade. Dating a guy that's a bus driver, dating a guy that's a plumber, that's settling, and that they should have a man that's making over six figures. These are things I heard with my own ears. No one's telling me this. That's why I say you need, with everything in life, watch it yourself and develop your own interpretation. This is stuff I heard personally. And the irony is that some of these sisters would get onto his platform and off rip, they would have a condescending, negative, and ugly view towards regular guys. But then Kevin would also ask, well, if there's a man that's in this top percentile of the men that you want, and I'm, and he phrased it in a much more abrasive manner than I would, but I think what he was trying to get them to look at was like, hey, it's not that there's no men. You have endless options, but you're looking at a man that's a teacher, or you're looking at a man that's a bus driver, or a man that, is a restaurant manager. You're looking at guys like that, like they're beneath you. When you're just a regular, everyday woman yourself, but you have a condescending view towards regular, everyday guys. And I think that was one of the things that Kevin was trying to get some of these sisters to realize on their platform. Now, did he have to say like they look like linebackers and stuff like that? I don't think so. That wasn't necessary. That was in poor taste. But I think he was trying to get a lot of these sisters that were like, hey, I want a good guy. I'm trying to find this good guy. But the perspective is out of whack, you know, because I think it's a problem. It's not like Kevin Samuels was telling people or telling women, hey, go date a dude that's sleeping under a bridge. He's like, hey, you got a neighbor who he might do lawn care. He might have a lawn care business and he's a preschool teacher. Who knows, right? But you're like, this guy is beneath you because he's not pulling up in a Maserati or he doesn't have a 6 or 7 bedroom home. So that guy's beneath you. Whereas I think what Kevin Samuels was trying to say was like, yo, don't have that view towards average men because you're average. And I think that was one of the things he wanted to do. And I remember a video I saw with Kevin Samuels, and he said that we have a negative stigma against being average. Like in today's world, if you call someone average, they'll look at it as an insult. And I think that was one of the things he wanted to get both men and women to see, that there's nothing wrong with being average. And to be honest, 90% of people are average. Most people you meet are average. Most people are average height, average weight, average looking, got an average job, average pay. That's what most people are in the world. And that's one of the things I did agree with him on. I think that sometimes, and it's not saying that you shouldn't be happy with whom you choose to be to date, but I think sometimes people have an unrealistic perspective on dating. One of the other things he talked about, you know, is he said, hey, if you, you know, you want this guy, but you have children from, you know, different relationships or what have you. Now, I'm not a person that's against single mothers. I'm not a person that's against, well, if you want to date a single mother, whatever it is you want to do, right? But one of the things Kevin pointed out is, you know, and this is just a man truth. I'm just going to put this out here for the women that may watch this. You know, a lot of men want their first child to be with a woman that doesn't have children. You know, and it's not saying that men look down or I guess maybe some men have a condescending view of single mothers. I don't. But idealistically, that's what a lot of men want. And what Kevin, I think, was trying to convey is that if you turn that up 10 notches and you get this baller, entrepreneur, sexy, attractive playboy type of guy, and you're coming to this man with other men's children, he may not be down with that because he's going to have a lot of other options to exploit. And I think women got mad at that because they didn't want to hear it. And it was a harsh truth that they didn't want to hear. And I think it needed to be said, you know. And he said things about men, he said things about women. And I think a lot of information I heard from Kevin Samuels I didn't agree with. And even the way he delivered his message. But I will say this to Kevin Samuels, and I, you know, people can think what they want, but I will say this to Kevin Samuels' credit. He gave us a gut check that we needed as men and women. I think he brought up topics. He made us question things that we don't want to question. I think a lot of us want to live in a delusional perspective about ourselves. Like even with me, right? I'm an overweight dude. I got a belly and stuff. And I, you know, like Kevin Samuels said, be the man of your dreams before you go after the woman of your dreams. And I'm like, you know, he said some things that stepped on my toes, but I had to be real. Like, yo, I'm only 5'8". I got a belly. I'm kind of overweight. You know, I'm making under, you know, 70 grand a year, you know, or whatever. I'm somewhere between $0 and 70. That's where my salary is, right? But this is my position. So can I walk up to Megan Good and holler at her? No, she's out of my league. And I think, you know, a lot of women have never been told that before. Like, yo, this guy's out of your league. Dudes, we get that all the time. Like, dudes will be like, yo, that girl out of your league. You can't get her. We get that all the time. Like, men get that all the time. And so I think he brought up subjects and topics that, you know, was real, you know. And like I said, I heard him, you know, get on men a lot. I've heard him get on women. I just think that to try to make a woman's whole value synonymous with her physical appearance, I don't think that was the best course of action. I just don't think it was. But the last thing I want to speak on as it relates to Kevin Samuels is one of the ugliest things I've seen, one of the most heinous things I've seen on social media is people saying that Kevin Samuels died because of karma. People said that Kevin Samuels, you know, died because God, you know, God works it out. So you cannot celebrate the demise of somebody, because here's the reality, right? We have to move to a level where we respect ourselves on a human to human level, right? So looking at it from that perspective, Kevin Samuels was somebody's son. Kevin Samuels was somebody's father. Kevin Samuels was somebody's friend. Kevin Samuels was somebody's neighbor. Kevin Samuels was somebody's homeboy, whomever, mentor, right? And even if you don't like the man, even if you didn't like his message, it's something dark, evil, and morbid about using God to justify death, saying that the divine feminine had its way. And so I have to ask, I think about this guy who was a YouTuber, content creator, and said things that were fucked up. He said a lot of dumb shit that I didn't agree with. He said some valid points that I did agree with. And I remember looking at one of his videos that he was making towards men. It made me feel like shit about myself. But it was the truth. You know? And like I said, it's a mixed bag. But when you say things like God and the divine feminine, then you open up another door. Because I live in a world where there's, since the 80s, there's been crack cocaine pushed into black communities. I live in a world where black girls and boys get human trafficked more than any other group of people. I live in a world where there was a crime bill passed in 1994 that disproportionately led to mass incarceration of black men and women. I live in a world where we're still oppressed by systemic racism. I live in a world where gangs roam our communities and people have to live in terror. This is the world that I live in. I live in a world where diamond companies, oil companies, rubber companies can still go into Africa and disrupt the economies there and rape and take natural resources. This is the world I live in. So I have to ask, if the divine feminine and the God, whatever God you're talking about, can take out a YouTuber, where are they at when all of this other pain, suffering, misery, and hell is going on? It's dark. So I say this, did I agree with everything Kevin Samuels said? No. Am I a follower of him? No. Did he say some things that were correct? Yeah. He said some things that got under my skin? Hell yeah. But I think to celebrate someone's passing is just gross. And I don't think no God of decency would support that. This has been episode 84 of No Truths Barred. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you stay tuned. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Much love, take care, and peace.